At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
KFI AM 640, you're listening to the John Cobell podcast on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up after 2:30. The U.S. Supreme Court is going to finally hear a case about a city's right to get people off the streets who are camping. I think that's the euphemism. All the mental patients and drug addicts who sleep in tents and sleeping bags laid out on sidewalks, in parks, all over public areas. There's been a confusing set of appeals court's decisions, mostly misread by people in power. And finally, the whole mess is going to the U.S. Supreme Court. We're going to talk to Kent Scheidecker. He's the legal director for the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation to explain this case. There's a lot of states and cities, and certainly Los Angeles and San Francisco have an extreme interest in this. Because there are courts that have, and a lot of it's the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, who have issued a confusing set of decisions, which I think a lot of these cities and states intentionally misread, because it gives them cover to continue their pro-vagrant policies to keep their cities filthy. We'll get to that coming up after 2:30. Okay, now on to Nathan Hochman. Nathan Hochman is one of the leading candidates for L.A. County District Attorney. And he was holding a press conference today outside of George Gascon's office, demanding that Gascon get rid of Tiffany Blacknell as his chief of staff. Nathan's going to come on and explain why. Nathan, how are you?
Very well, John. Thanks for inviting me on.
Did you just have this press conference, or is it upcoming?
We just had it. It was right in front of the Hall of Justice, George Gascon's office. And I demanded, not just as a candidate for district attorney, but as a citizen of L.A. County, that he terminate Tiffany Blacknell, his chief of staff, who took her first day of office today, because she is the most pro-criminal, anti-police chief of staff the L.A. district attorney's office has ever had.
She has written a number of incendiary things online. She was proudly reminding the world that she was even a part of the Rodney King riots back in the early 90s.
Very true. And she actually has written that she's described the police as barbarians, an occupying army. She's actually posted a picture of herself wearing a T-shirt saying that the police are trained to kill us. You know, again, when you want to send a message to your own prosecutors, to law enforcement, and to the public that you're going to be someone to prosecute crime, this is the opposite of that message, and by the way, consistent with Gascon's message that he's more interested in criminals' rights than victims' rights.
It's interesting, after 3 years of getting so much criticism for his policies, and he's weeks away from this election, this primary election, where he's not doing well in the polls. I mean, that he would stick a finger in everybody's eye and say, you know what, I'm going to go with Tiffany Blacknell here as my chief of staff. I mean, that's outrageous nerve.
I mean, stick a finger is one way to describe it. I view it as a slap in the face. I mean, imagine if you're law enforcement and you're the police chief or you're the sheriff and you're trying to attract more officers to work in Los Angeles. And not only is the DA the most pro-criminal DA, but he's just doubled down on that message by putting someone who's never been a DA. I mean, Tiffany Blacknell was a deputy public defender her whole life. She's had these incendiary statements about basically hating the police, believing the police are our enemy, they're our barbarians, you know, they are an occupying army. And this is the person that he has now elevated as his chief of staff to be his representative to his own people, to the public, and to law enforcement. I'd say it was shocking, if not it was consistent with what George Gascon has done for the last 3 years.
Does he have a political death wish here? I mean, this really is the stupidest thing to do, you know, 6-7 weeks before a primary election when he's got 10 people running against him, you know, with you at the top of the list.
Again, if ever you could, you know, if George Gascon's one thing, he is consistently stupid. He's consistently pro-criminal and actually transparent about it. You know, the voters weren't paying as much attention in 2020 when he was saying these things because he didn't have a track record. Now he's got a 3+ year track record of being the most pro-criminal district attorney in the history of that office, boasting that he has saved violent and serious offenders over 10,000 years of prison time, which the evidence in the law called for, but which he will not authorize his prosecutors to bring.
Hold on, time out. I haven't heard this one before. He's actually bragging that he saved 10,000 years worth of prison time?
Correct. Over 10,000 years of prison time has not gone to violent and serious offenders because he won't bring the charges that the evidence justified that would have resulted in that additional prison time. And he actually boasts that that is a badge of honor for him. And what's ironic is that it would be a badge of honor for a defense attorney. It's a badge of shame for a district attorney that's supposed to represent the public and victims. And George Gascon simply does not get it.
How does having Tiffany Blacknell as his chief of staff, can you explain how that would affect prosecutions, cases, the behavior of the deputy DAs?
Well, again, she has a very loud say in the policies that will govern all over 900 deputy district attorneys out there and the 100,000 or so cases they're going to prosecute. So, for instance, when they say that they will not bring a gun enhancement if someone uses a gun or a gang enhancement if you're part of a gang, that message will be doubled down upon while Tiffany Blacknell is sort of, you know, cracking the whip on those 900-plus prosecutors. And again, it's shocking that someone who's never been a prosecutor is now the chief of staff of over 900 of them. That shows Gascon's reliance on people who have no experience because he himself has never personally prosecuted a criminal case in his entire life.
As you've been campaigning, meeting a lot of people, appearing at various forums and question and answer events. What kind of sense do you get on how the public is viewing this race? I mean, obviously nobody was paying attention 4 years ago, and there were a lot of distractions that year, and this one snuck by everyone. What do you think the general understanding of this race is by the public?
I think that the general understanding is that the public finally gets it, that the DA's position is very important and crucial for their own safety, the safety of themselves, their family, their neighborhoods and communities. And I've seen this across the political spectrum. It's not just Republicans. It's Democrats and independents that have come to my campaign at campaign events, that have been generously supporting my campaign. In fact, we've hit campaign fundraising records based on the enthusiasm that we've gotten from across the entire political spectrum. So I am seeing a groundswell of anger and support that is going to ride George Gascon out of office, starting first in the March 2024 primaries, and then if he makes it through the primary, certainly in the November election when I beat him. Our polling shows if that election was today, I would beat him by 15 to 20 points.
All right. Well, I wish you a lot of luck, and we'll certainly talk again before Election Day in March for the primary. Give out your information if people want to access your website to read more about you, to donate the campaign. What is that website?
Sure. The website is Nathan Hochman, NathanHochman.com. And, John, thank you very much for having me on.
Anytime. Thank you for coming on, Nathan.
Appreciate it.
Talk with you again soon. That's Nathan Hochman. And if you don't know his background, he is a former federal prosecutor, an assistant U.S. Attorney General, also president of the Los Angeles City Ethics Commission. And he has been polling well in this race to replace Gascon. Others have as well, and will certainly be highlighting other candidates. But he made the case today against Tiffany Blacknell, who is Gascon is a disaster. Tiffany Blacknell is a disaster. And it's really a shame that we all have to live through this, but that's why you got to pay attention. You got to vote. You got to get up on election day first Tuesday in March, and you got to vote against Gascon. You know, we could change this. There's 14,000 cases that he has not prosecuted intentionally. 14,000 sitting in the system, and this I hadn't heard before. What Nathan Hochman said, he's bragging that he has saved 10,000 hours of prison time for felony prisoners by withholding charges against them that would have increased their prison sentence. 10,000 extra hours that these guys will have to commit their next felony. And he's bragging about it. So we're beyond debating this. There's no more conversations to have. It's impossible to converse with these people. They simply have to be removed. Gascon has to be removed and forced to take Tiffany Blacknell with him. She is a piece of work. She is about as... I've never seen such a public cop hater in my life. And she's gleeful about it. She revels in it. Go look at her social media. Holy mackerel. You know, another cluster B situation. More coming up.
You're listening to John Kobelch on demand from KFI AM 640.
Coming up at 2:30, we are going to talk with Kent Scheidegger. He's the legal director of the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. He has filed a brief as a friend of the court to try to fight a court decision. It's actually, there's been several court decisions that has made it, so they say, very difficult for cities and states to remove vagrants off the streets. People living in public areas like sidewalks, roads, parks. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear an appeal. Los Angeles and San Francisco and San Diego also wants this ruling overturned. It was in 2019, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, known as Martin versus the City of Boise. There's also another case, which was the City of Grants Pass versus Johnson. So hopefully everyone rational in this world is hoping the Supreme Court will overturn these appeals court decisions. Kent Scheidegger, the legal director, is going to explain the details. This is important. This could have a real impact on all the mental patients and drug addicts running around in the streets, making life unpleasant for us. That's just after the 2:30 news. We talked about this briefly the other day, and now there's a video. And I've just seen screenshots of it. This is not something that they're Maybe it's out there. I don't know yet. It's about the guy who was found dead inside the engine of that Delta plane in Utah. Remember that story? They have a lot of detail now on how he ended up inside the engine. His name was Kyler Effinger, 30 years old of Park City. This happened on New Year's Day. He climbed into the turbine of the aircraft. It was sitting on the Salt Lake City airport awaiting takeoff. There was 100 people on board. So they pieced together video from various airport cameras, and they showed him being dropped off at the airport. By the way, keep track here of how many times security should have nabbed him and they didn't. Remember this next time they grab a bottle of water out of your backpack.
Or they do a random check of my suitcase.
Right.
Me.
Right.
I pose no threat.
And, you know, they're busy giving you that extra frisk.
Exactly.
One of my sons, he's a ball player. So he's well built. And there's some questionable TSA agents who over frisk him when he's tries to get through security. This footage, this is from Fox 13, shows him being dropped off at the airport, going through security, all right? Then he walks through the terminal, and he starts running away from the gate, and he's tossing all his belongings into the air. Then he runs to a locked door at the gate and tries to open it, couldn't, had a quick interaction with an airport employee. Then he ran off to another door and took his shoe and struck the window. Didn't get anywhere. Took off a third time and kicked an emergency exit door open. Ran down the stairwell and headed out onto the tarmac. He then runs for the plane, which was turned on. It was de-icing. And he climbed into... He climbed inside. The engine was mounted on the wing. And he had crawled into what they call the intake cowling that directs air to the engine fan section. Now, it doesn't seem like he got chopped up. The early reports, it was unclear. And it was because it said that they administered naloxone at the scene. So I guess he was under, it was some kind of opioid fit he was having. But he was pronounced dead there. Because they had said he was partially in that intake cowling, which made me think, well, maybe he was ground up. So only part of him was there and the other part was in the engine.
I don't need that visual.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. I always get out of control. The thing is, they called his dad and... You feel bad, but his dad said, well, he got held up in security. He was going to see his grandfather, who was supposedly sick. So Kyler got held up in security, missed his flight, and those phone calls. I just knew it was coming on. They call it the manic phase. Those just don't end well for him. Obviously, this one was the worst one ever. A little bit of understatement from dad there. So... He knew his son was nuts, and his son was having some sort of manic issue, and he ends up inside a plane engine. But something must have happened to him that he died. Maybe he did get hit by the turbine, right? Maybe he wasn't chopped up, but maybe he
got
hit. Yeah,
right. Exactly, because he didn't die of a drug overdose.
No. I mean, they gave him naloxone, so I thought maybe. It was an overdose, but maybe he just got whacked in the head by one of the turbines. And it didn't chop him up, but knocked him unconscious and dead. So that, what's disturbing, though, is at how many points should somebody have nabbed him?
Well, that makes no sense. Exactly.
Don't they have, I always thought they had cops and undercover security in offices, just inside panels, right? As you're running down the runway, that there are like secret doors or secret panels where these guys can jump out and take care of any kind of a terrorist or intruder.
Maybe they were on their lunch break at the time.
All of them. And what's the point of having all these sealed doors if the emergency exit you could throw? I understand why you'd have an emergency exit wide open. But again, shouldn't there be somebody guarding it there? Especially when the guy is running from security and throwing his clothes all around. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk with Kent Scheidegger from, he's the legal director for the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. And it's about these appeals court rulings, which have created and aggravated homeless situations all over the western half of the country, including Los Angeles and San Francisco. Everybody is sued to try to give. See, we're going to try to make this simple because I think the city officials misread these lawsuits to give them cover so they could keep the homeless enjoying their lives on our public property. But we'll talk with Kent about it. Because the Supreme Court is now going to take a final look and make a decision once and for all.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
We're on from 1 till 4 after 4, John Cobalt Show on demand, the podcast. And at 3 o'clock, we're going to be talking with Katie Grimes from CaliforniaGlobe.com. Because in San Francisco, don't make that Sacramento, they have opened up tiny apartments for the homeless. And it's costing $478,000 per unit. $478,000 for a tiny apartment, which is 280 square feet. That's it. 280 square feet. We'll give you all the details with Katie Grimes coming up. And also, vagrant news. The U.S. Supreme Court announced this week it's going to hear an appeal challenging a ruling by the Ninth Circuit in 2019, which cities and states say really get in the way of clearing out homeless people off public lands like sidewalks and parks. There's actually two cases, one of them called Martin versus the City of Boise, the other City of Grants Pass versus Johnson, both of them the Ninth Circuit, and they have created, so say the cities and states, a lot of difficulty in removing the homeless. Kent Scheidegger is with the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. He's the legal director, and they filed a friend of the court brief in support of those who are trying to get this decision overturned. And again, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear the case, and we're going to talk to Kent right now. How are you, Kent?
Very good. Thank you.
Can you explain as easily as possible for people who may not be totally familiar, what did the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal decide in 2019 that has, I think, helped aggravate the homeless situation in the streets?
Well, there's an old case by the U.S. Supreme Court that says it violates the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution to punish a person based on their status rather than what they did. And in that old case, the status was being a drug addict. So the Ninth Circuit took that case and they said that if you don't let a person sleep on the street and they don't have a shelter to go to, there's no space available in shelters, then you're effectively punishing them for the status of being homeless, and that violates that old case, which is pretty absurd because, you know, criminal law generally involves some act, and sleeping in a public place or camping out in a public place is an act, and so that old case doesn't really apply.
Right. They were being arrested for the act of sleeping in a public place. They weren't being arrested due to their homelessness.
That's correct.
And did the cities misinterpret this in any way?
Well, there's a lot of variation, but it was a pretty, the first ruling was a pretty severe ruling. So the case they have now, the City of Grants Pass in Oregon, the first ruling was from Boise, and now we've got the one from Grants Pass in Oregon. And they tried to get around it by saying, okay, we won't make it a crime, we'll just make it a citation. And then if you repeatedly get citations, then that becomes a crime. So they tried to modify it some and get around the ruling, but the Ninth Circuit basically shot him down and said, no, even that, it still ends up being a crime.
Did the court put any restrictions on sleeping in public? Didn't they have a provision where they were allowed to sleep from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., something like that? That's what I remember, because I had this argument with a city councilman, and I asked, well, why don't you just rouse them every morning at 6 a.m.? And if you keep rousing them day after day, eventually they'll get tired of it, and they'll go somewhere where the law isn't being enforced. So I thought
I don't think that's the Grants Pass case, but basically their rule is you can't stop people unless you have enough open shelter spaces, and they can't be shelters with restrictions, like no dogs or no drinking or,
really?
Or religion. They have to be just open. If anybody, doesn't have any shelter that they can go to or that they feel is overly restrictive, then you can't enforce your ordinance.
So the only way for the city to respond to these people sleeping in the street was an anything-goes shelter where they could bring all their booze and their drugs and their crazy behavior and their dogs inside, indoors.
Well, pretty much, yeah. I mean, you might quibble about how much restriction is too much, but basically,
Let me ask you something from another direction, because is part of the role of a judge not only to interpret the literal interpretation of the text, or try to figure out what the intent was of those who wrote the law, but also to consider the dramatic practical effect it has on a society? Like, when you're judging, you're taking in a lot of factors, right? We're relying on your judgment here. What's best for the society? Because whatever their interpretations are, it has created massive havoc in the streets here. Shouldn't a judge look at the end result and say, well, look, there's got to be a better way?
Well, that's part of the debate over what's the proper way to interpret the Constitution. But either way, it would come out, you know, first, it isn't even remotely close to a interpretation of the Constitution as originally understood. And secondly, it does have these adverse consequences. You know, there's even an amicus brief from people whose mission is to try to help the homeless. And helping people with addiction problems is complicated and not easy. And even the people trying to help them say, look, we need some incentive to get them into treatment because your typical addict or drunk won't go to treatment just for being asked. So it really not only hurts the city with all these people sleeping on the street, in the long run, it even hurts the people who are there because of an addiction problem.
Right. So you're taking issue with the whole premise that this is not a case that the Eighth Amendment should be applied to. Because you're
not... Definitely not an Eighth Amendment case. I mean, the old case was a stretch to use the Eighth Amendment rather than some other provision of the Constitution. But it shouldn't be extended to this. It shouldn't be extended at all.
What about people who are not in their right mind? There's a lot of mental illness out there. You know, at least with a drunk or a drug addict, you might be able to get them in a lucid moment and convince them to get some... to get some help, right? At least you have a shot to talk to them. But when you have a crazy person who's in the middle of a massive mental breakdown, in fact, they may have had so much damage to their brain, they can't ever function. There's no mechanism for a city to take those people in.
Not unless they are so far gone that they're considered a danger to themselves or to others. That's the standard that was laid down many years ago. And that in itself is a controversy and a related one, that maybe we went too far in that, and that people who were just in need of help and unable to rationally decide whether to accept it should also come within the involuntary commitment.
Is it unreasonable to expect the Supreme Court, with its current makeup, to throw out the Court of Appeals decision?
Oh, no, I think it's quite reasonable to expect it. I was surprised when they didn't take the Boise case a couple of years ago, but now they've taken it up, and the Ninth Circuit is out by itself. None of the other circuits have gone that way, and I think there's a strong chance this decision will be reversed.
Is that right? No other appeals court went along with this, because obviously the homeless situation in the West is far worse than the other parts of the country, from Seattle to San Francisco to Los Angeles to San Diego. You don't see this kind of stuff in New York and Boston and Washington. They got their problems, but
it's
not this.
Part because it doesn't get as cold on the California coast or in the Central Valley as it does in Boston. That's part of it. But another part is the laxity of government, in part because of this ruling and in part because some of our cities are just very badly run by people who don't know what they're doing.
Right. This ruling affected California, Alaska, Washington, Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Nevada, Arizona, Hawaii, just those 9 states.
Correct. That's the Ninth Circuit, yes.
All right. Kent Scheidegger, thank you for coming on and helping us understand this. And he's
glad to be here.
Legal director for the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. It is good news that the Supreme Court has accepted this this pair of cases, and maybe they'll reverse these decisions, and then the cities will no longer have an excuse not to remove all the vagrants, drug addicts, and crazy people that are littering the public spaces. Deborah Mark is, coming up. Just this promo is worth tuning in. We're going to talk about the professor, his wife, cooking vegan food, and 2 porn stars.
Ooh, that's exciting.
All in one story.
Wow, that's a tease.
You'll be amused by this.
I'm sure.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
John Cobalt Show, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. We are going to, what did I say we were going to do at 3 o'clock?
You said something about vegan. That's all I remember.
Oh, that's coming up next. Okay. Oh, I know. I just made a big mess here. 3 o'clock, we're going to have Katie Grimes from CaliforniaGlobe.com, because in Sacramento, they have a tiny apartment project that's opening up. They spent $478,000 per unit. These tiny homes are 280 square feet. $478,000. That's the big project that the mayor's really proud of. It's hard to believe. Here's the story. About a professor, his wife, vegan cooking, and porn stars. Now, you know, I think that vegan people are a little occasionally unbalanced.
Occasionally?
Yeah, yeah. There's a professor at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. He's actually the chancellor. His name is Joe Gow, G-O-W. Joe Gow has a wife named Carmen, and they're vegans. And they like to make and post videos spotlighting vegan recipes. Mm-hmm. Like you're in the kitchen with Joe and Carmen, and they show you how to make vegan food.
What's wrong with that?
Well, then they invite porn stars to appear as guests. And they help prepare the vegan recipes.
Naked?
Well, you know, after preparing the vegan recipes, it's followed by more explicit videos. They have a they have an OnlyFans account.
So are you saying that vegan food turns people on?
Apparently, yes. It makes them very sexually active. Mm-hmm. They show a clip from, well, the professor and his wife are tasting vegan pizza after having sex with the porn star guest.
Oh my gosh. So they're having sex with...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Did I not make that clear?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I thought they were just guests and the porn stars were having sex with each other. I didn't know that the cooks were involved.
The cooks and the porn stars have after making the vegan
food.
Well,
does this make you think anything different about vegans? I mean, you know, you like to talk about sex all the time.
I'm not on the sofa with two porn stars
after show. Well, we don't know that.
What's going on at your house?
Not that.
So Joe and Carmen, they call themselves the passionate plant-powered couple. Okay?
Okay.
They post videos on their account called Sexy Happy Couple. So they start with preparing the vegan recipes. Then the adult film stars come to the kitchen and everybody makes the food. They eat the food. And then the whole group has sex together. And now he has been suspended from his school. Apparently didn't go over well with the head of the university. He's upset. He goes, I think we have people on the board that say they're for free speech, but really they aren't. I don't know how they're going to explain this. He's threatening to sue. They've put Gow on paid administrative leave. He was going to retire as chancellor at the end of the school year and then come back as a teacher. And Gow is saying he's going to be filing a lawsuit. So what happens is after you watch the recipe with the porn stars, the account tells users to go to their OnlyFans page for explicit scenes. And you see. And I don't know if the food's involved in those scenes. It doesn't say.
Does it say what kind of vegan recipes?
These could be multi-purpose vegetables that they use.
Wow.
He's also upset because they've been abandoned by some of their friends.
Well, I mean, if their friends aren't into that kind of thing,
the professor says he and his wife have spent around $100,000 on holidays indulging their passions.
Vegan food's expensive, and then throw that with some porn stars, I guess.
I guess they have to pay the porn stars, right?
Yeah,
sure. They don't. Those girls don't do it for free. I mean, you can... Carmen, the wife, said that her mom was not super excited at hearing this story. The family reaction is a challenge. Some of the adult film stars they've had, for example, they had a man and a woman, Danny Mountain. And Mia Makulva. They had Lauren Phillips on one day. I don't know these people.
No.
Okay. You haven't watched any vegan porn channels?
No, I haven't. That is just not my thing.
Well, Lauren,
I'll watch vegan recipes without the porn.
Lauren Phillips was flirting with Gow and his wife, telling the couple they were delicious. had enough of this.
Yeah. Thanks, John. That was riveting.
And now you're going to do the news. What'd you bring for lunch?
Right now I'm eating some chips.
Chips, okay.
Yeah.
That's a sexy food. They are spending $478,000 per unit in Sacramento on tiny homes for vagrants. Seriously. The mayor of Sacramento, Daryl Steinberg, is very proud of this. We are going to talk to Katie Grimes from CaliforniaGlobe.com, who's done a story exposing all the details, the massive amount of money they have spent on these tiny homes. So Katie Grimes is next. Deborah Mark is live in the KFI 24-hour newsroom. Hey, you've been listening to the John Cobalt Show podcast. You can always hear the show live on KFI AM 640 from 1 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday. And, of course, anytime on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.